Hi, you're listening to Adrienne Barbeau and Quality Time Broadcast.
I'm just going to do it one more time.
Quality Time, video games, all the girls, comedy and matches. Quality Time, video games, all the girls, comedy and matches.
Get some headphones on.
You are a dog.
You are a robot.
Shut the fuck up. What the hell is that? What the fuck is that?
It's like the Power Man 5000 video where it's like the breakdown. He's like, you are a robot. Oh, we have fun. So, yeah, Sean, you're part of a union, you said.
I am.
Okay. And what are the Teamsters up to these days?
Making They Live references. I'm serious, not a whole lot. All right, so my boy watches movies with closed captioning. Okay. Right? I don't know, he just does this, and he'll take pictures when he sees something good. Mm-hmm. Like Halloween, it's like scary synth. He's like, you need to see this. I'm like, all right, I've seen that. It's pretty cool. John Carpenter. There's lots of synths.
I like it because it infers that, like, a person who's deaf, who's never heard synthesizers, that's going to paint the picture for them to understand this scene. Like, oh, Siri, this is... Oh, I can hear the keyboard in the eye of my mind right now.
Yes. I didn't check to see if he used, like, a DX7 or a Korg in this.
Yeah, I don't know either, Jer. You're going to have to... That's more
did
research.
Did I tell you I got a DX9?
I don't know what that is.
It's just like one step up from a DX7, the Yamaha from 1984.
All right.
I thought you were talking about Deep Space Nine.
No, okay. D-Generation X?
Yeah, I got a DX9. It's just like the model from Deep Space Nine. So, it's actually...
in the backyard right now.
It's a very powerful dildo.
Deep Space Nine.
DX9. For penetration like you've never seen. Like a fist.
Speaking of penetration, Eric sent me a Joe Bob Briggs link, and I was watching the Friday 13th one. He's like, this is actually in 3D, so you can actually see penetration in 3D. He's like, sorry, TNT's going to cut this out.
I miss Joe Bob Briggs.
I completely forgot about him.
They need to bring him back, I think. They brought back Monster Vision. I would watch, 100%.
Joe Bob Briggs, pretty much the reason all of America dies because of Captain Trips, so...
Oh, that is true.
Gets past Texas because of him. So
I only know two things then now that he's in. Do you know the other thing that he's in, Jeremy?
Casino.
Yeah, he's the idiot.
I don't understand.
He is. Get your feet off the table. Use his head. What did he say? Use his head to open the door. Yeah. Holy shit, there's him.
Oh, classic Joe Bob
this
Briggs.
Guy hit in twice in a half hour and you weren't onto it? Well, people have to win sometimes. Yeah, you're a fucking moron. Get the fuck out of here.
It's so fun to see his moronic guy. He can't be a pit boss. What do you got?
I got a bagel.
Ooh.
You know us people eat lox and bagels.
Lox on bagels.
Classic Jewish move. I don't know. Should we kick off the show? Is that the start? Is this it?
I'm glad we have brought Jewishness to the show again.
Yes.
I'm here.
And we're glad for you guys joining us again. Welcome to Quality Time, everyone. My name is Eric Woodworth. Thank you very much again for joining us, all you Quality Timers out there. And to my right is none other than my brother, Mr. Jeremy P. Woodworth. Jeremy, how are you doing, sir?
I don't know who you're talking about.
I'm sorry. Who's joining us on the show this evening?
It's David Keith.
David Keith.
David Keith, you know, otherwise a star of Lords of Discipline and Great Santini.
Not Keith David, but David Keith.
Yeah, David Keith. David
ew,
Keith.
Ew. Sure.
I'll put on any pair of sunglasses you want me to. I'm from Texas. It's fine.
Oh, man. That's good, Jeremy.
Low lift us up where we belong.
Okay. I didn't expect it to go that far. And we do have a special guest this week. My good friend, my childhood bud. We've been friends forever. And he's finally made his way here because I begged him and because he's going on vacation tomorrow. It's none other than Sean Laskowitz, everyone.
Yay.
Yay.
Hey, Sean. How are you?
I'm glad to be here.
Now, Sean, we had you on the show tonight because we're going over, I think, a movie that you have a great deal of knowledge of. A movie that you're actually wearing a shirt for to the podcast about said movie.
Would you believe me if I told you I had one on yesterday also?
You had multiple.
Different one?
Well, they live shirts.
Do you have the one that actually is Obama's face?
It's not Obama, but it's the guy who looks like Obama and says, "Obey."
Yes. Obey. Yes. Obama.
Obama.
Obama. Yeah, so we're going to be going over They Live tonight. Sean, it's great to have you here. How are things with the Teamsters?
The Teamsters are great.
You were getting into it. You were telling me something about one of your guys from work or something like that?
So we watch these movies with closed captioning, and there's a scene where Roddy Piper's trying to get a job.
Okay.
And he has to speak to the shop steward.
Okay.
Okay, so we showed this to our shop steward. He's like, "You guys are fucking morons."
So he didn't think, did he not think that it was appropriate for work?
But he knew it. He knew exactly what it was.
Yes. That's a good reference, yes. Then. That's all you really want is to just be.
Yes.
Can I speak to your shop steward? We're working here. You guys working? Doesn't it look like we're working?
Are you saying we ain't working?
You told me this one story one time about, I guess, one of the meetings you guys had about some guy who was just like, "I want to be able to take off work." Could you tell that story for us?
It was about home earlies.
Okay.
We have a policy where you can go home. If you do it more than twice, you have to bring documentation.
Mm-hmm.
So this guy brought up the idea of going home whenever you want, as many times as you want, with no documentation.
And this is at like a full Teamsters meeting. There. So there's like, this is just like everybody from the union all there. He's just like, "We give the floor to the people here in the union so they can come up with good ideas."
Yes.
And this was this guy's bright idea. All
right, so the president leans over and he's like, "Let me get this straight. So you want to be able to go home whenever you want, as many times as you want, with no documentation?" He's like, "Yes."
the fucking grapefruits on this guy.
All right, but you have to have somebody second the notion, all right? So then we did. We had some people second it. And there's an older guy who's been there like 30 years. He was like, "Get him the fuck out of here." That's good stuff, man.
Oh, man. You also told me wonderful union stories, too, about... I guess you have a coworker that'll remain unnamed for the sake of this story that magically goes on leave anytime there's a new video game that comes out.
Yes.
Oh gosh. Wow.
My back hurts. My hand hurts. You know, just typical comp cases.
Yes, but he has to go to like every doctor on this.
It's better than working. So for the documentation. Back when we had documentation, you would go and you'd go to the doctor and you'd say, "I'm having sinus problems, I'm having headaches." And then they would treat you and then give you documentation. So this guy has gone so many times.
Yes.
They were like, "Well, what's wrong with you?" He's like, "I'm crapping blood." And he's like, they're like, "All right, drop your pants." And he's like, "Damn it."
I guess the downside is that after he's, basically falsified so many sicknesses, he was like, "There's blood coming out of my asshole."
Yes.
And he thought that was going to be it, right? Yep. They just write him a note and you're like, "Oh, crapping blood, he's on his way." But this doctor gets fucking five digits deep in him.
Yes. He was like, "I took some fingers in the ass." He's like, "It's still better than working." Jesus.
I don't know if that's better than working. Right. I don't know.
We had a guy who definitely tried to get off as much work as possible with as many excuses, and we know he was running out of excuses, so we offered him excuses that he could use. And my favorite was, "Why don't you suggest that maybe you needed to go to the doctor because you might have cervical cancer?" So, and I was just praying that he wouldn't know what the fuck we're talking, because he was a moron, that he would actually say this to his boss. He's just like, I think I might have cervical cancer. Somebody said that I might. And I'm like, "Yes, you definitely might have cervical cancer." So
my favorite are always the stories about people who are trying to get out of work and then or they go to take their drug test for work, and then it comes back that they're clear of drugs, but that they're also pregnant. That's my favorite.
I think I'm pregnant. I don't know what's happened.
That's discrimination if you're saying that ain't my pee, because I seen Junior before.
Yeah, so I was going to bring up Junior.
For some reason, I'm lactating.
Oh, yes, Jeremy talked about lactating on the show. Jeremy lactated when he was 11 once. Years old or something like that.
And I still feel dirty to this day.
Because he's got those big old bitch tits. Gotta love him. Gotta love
I think it's just one of those blasphemous things that God just does, just to say, your world's upside down. I do whatever I want. So
that sounds legit, Jeremy.
Yeah.
And a little bit crazy, which is why I like it.
Hey, it happens. So.
Jeremy, you last episode we had a
technical problem.
We had some technical issues, and one of your songs that you were bringing to the show that you recorded
was gone.
Well, that's, I mean, technically it's going to be 2 weeks ago when this comes out. So two weeks ago you had technical issues, and you've remedied them now.
I re-recorded it.
You re-recorded it. Yes. Okay. Well,
Is version two.
This should we play the special song? Do you need special intro for it?
This is a song that I dedicate to women and womankind, if that's a thing.
I think womankind.
Womenhood.
Womankind is a thing, I think.
I think even Gloria Steinem would think this is one of her greatest songs ever.
Gloria Steinem. I don't even know who that is. Jeremy, what did the references?
I'll just say Alanis Morissette instead.
Okay, that much. Steinem. Okay, now we're
at least for our generation.
20. Now we're at a 20-year-old reference. I like it. You're stepping your game.
She's like one of them new kids these days, you know, like Nirvana.
So. Okay, so with no other introduction, here's Jeremy's lost song from last week. There's some things, you know, when you plant a seed, okay? when you start a garden, you plant seeds, and you over the weeks and weeks, you water it, you make sure it gets sunlight, you buy a plant food, and I gotta tell you, this was the exact opposite of that, 100%. This is.
I kind of think I was inspired because I like watching women's volleyball naked.
So. Them naked or you naked?
Well, if they only they could play naked, you know.
Okay, Jeremy.
Dirty old man.
Were you watching volleyball? Is this where that came from? Or I don't. I'm just trying to see the starting point.
I'm just
from
trying
this.
To channel Barnes and Barnes, you know, or maybe, you know, the mind of. James Finn.
Jer. Oh, so. The obligatory James Finn reference has been made. Nice.
Early on.
That's fun. Oh, God, Jeremy, what do you have now? I don't like when Jeremy takes audio into his own hands. It scares me. It truly frightens me.
So I hope Matt Cannon enjoyed that, although it was actually a white song.
Yes, super fan so. Matt Cannon. Oh, I do have
Joe Robinson?
I do have one. I'm looking for
I haven't done the extra echo version of his song yet. So.
You haven't?
No.
Well, then you be fucking up, yo.
Well, I need to buy at least three more echo machines, so. So. Sean, do you ever think there can be enough echo in a song? I don't think so.
Jeremy doesn't believe there can ever be enough echo. But we do have one Joe Robinson correction.
Hey, Joe Robinson. Do you have any corrections for us this week? Quality time.
I think there's too much echo.
So, Joe Robinson wanted to correct us, and I think this is
from 98 Rock.
From 98 Rock, he wanted to correct us two episodes ago. He stated that we kept saying the phrase "tidy whiteys" when it should be "whitey tighties."
Oh,
so that was the Joe Robinson correction. for last week.
That's only, I think, south of the equator. They say whitey tighties.
I've heard tighty whiteys.
Tighty whiteys? Or is it whitey tighties? Maybe it's tighty white. Maybe I got his correction messed
up. I'm not black, so I don't speak black talk, whether it's whitey tighties or tighty whiteys. You know, I don't know what a bay or a boo is.
Who do you think? Do you think black people wear more standard underwear, or is it white people? Look, I have no idea.
I look at lots of National Geographics, and they're usually like a loincloth or like some sort of animal skin, they wear clothes at all.
Well, Jeremy has proved that he's a total monster.
Look, in Kingsville, I've never even seen a black person in our neighborhood. So
in Kingsville?
In Kingsville. Kingsville, Baltimore. So
Catonsville, right? Yeah, that got you.
Well, no, I do live in Catonsville. And, you know.
No, I would say I feel like, so my only... not that I've seen a lot of black people in their actual underwear, but in one of my murder mysteries that we do called Sing for Your Life, I actually get into tighty whiteys. I get into my tighty whiteys at one part in the show, and a large black woman came up to me afterwards, elderly. She's probably in like her 60s or something like that. And she comes over to me and she goes, kind of caresses my back, like nice. my lower back. She goes, "You look just like my husband." "He used to walk around with his underwear on just like you." And I mean,
please, I wish she had said on a pile of old tires.
So, listen, I had to inform her that I was already spoken for, but just know that my body and my ability to wear tighty whiteys, it basically makes me the sexual desire of black women over 65.
Hells yeah. So, still got it.
I don't like to brag, but I'm pretty much a fuck machine.
We're pretty open on this show that we encourage any sort of racial prejudice, except against Jews.
Yeah, we're anti-Jew.
We will shut you down.
Oh, gosh.
Well, without further ado, should we get into it, folks? Should we get into tonight's topic? Or do you have some secret story that you're ready to lay on us, Jer? Because this is usually your MO. When I'm ready to start the main meat of the show, you like to come in with some extra story.
No, we need to get this going. So we need to just pop this cork, pop this virgin four-year-old.
Oh, my God, Jeremy.
Whoa, what's that?
Huh?
Is this Dawkins?
It's tonight's topic.
I thought it was Dream Warriors.
Dream Warriors!
Yeah. Yeah.
Tonight we are going over the 1988 classic, John Carpenter's They Live.
Ooh, you know, the way this movie opened up with a train going by,
yeah,
I realized what the real name of the movie was.
What's that?
Hobo with a Shotgun.
It's very similar to Hobo with a Shotgun, but it's very much, I think, John Carpenter's greatest work.
And I didn't realize that he was a hobo. He was coming from Colorado.
Yeah, he is an official hobo. He probably hitched that very train to get there.
Yes, sweet.
I don't know, I'm a big Roddy Piper fan in this film.
Did you want to mention my video that I recorded of Roddy Piper to talk to you from like 20 years ago?
You know, we didn't mention it in Hell's Comes to Frogtown, but I vaguely remember the video because you sent it to me. I don't know if you have it in digital.
I don't know if I put it on Facebook or not.
I don't know if you did, but years ago, Jeremy went to a Monster Mania or a Chiller Theater.
Chiller. Yeah.
And he met Roddy Piper. Wow. And Roddy Piper sent me a special video to me that said, he was just like, "Oh, what do you know, Eric? Okay, you seem like a good kid there. Okay, hey, let me tell you one thing. Stay in school, do your homework, and don't become a professional wrestler, okay?" Ha ha, like that.
And definitely won over a six-pack when he came back from his lunch break.
Oh, so. Man, Roddy Piper, he used to pour on the alcohol. He was legendary in WWE rings for being able to drink his fucking face off every night.
He certainly couldn't outdrink Andre the Giant.
Well, that's just, I think, physical attributes alone. Yes. I mean, if you did pound for pound, I'm going to go with Roddy being the hardest core alcoholic of them all. Maybe only second to a Ric Flair, possibly. Maybe only second to
I think it would take, like, at least five Nancy Allens to outdrink Andre the Giant.
Five Nancy Allens? Yes. I don't like that you have Nancy Allen as a unit of measurement.
Well, she's a good drinker from, you know, the Temple of Doom or Temple of Thunderdome or something, whichever movie she was in, and, you know, she outdrank somebody.
I give it 12 Nancy Kerrigans. That's that's what we're gonna do for now. Sean, what do you how many people do you think he equals?
You'd rather party with Nancy Allen or Nancy Kerrigan. So
I give it 4 Nancy Drew books. That's
we were in line to meet Robert Englund, and there was another gentleman there to meet Nancy Allen. I think she canceled at the last moment. Kind of ruined everybody.
Yeah, fucking Nancy Allen. Yeah, man. Bitch.
There's nobody that cancels more than Brad Dourif.
You know who's coming this year to Monster Mania, though, in Hunt Valley? The Big Red Machine, Kane, from the WWE, is going to be there. He's the big star.
Oh, I got a free picture with him as Pogo at the tattoo convention.
Oh, you did? Nice! You know, he just became the mayor of a small town in Ohio. That's not a joke. Really? He won the Republican nomination and won a mayoral race for some small town. Maybe it's in Michigan. I'm not sure. Don't quote me on the exact things, but if you Google search it, you can find it.
Does he talk?
Yes, he does now.
Hold his hand up.
Would it be great?
I
he's in character. He doesn't even talk at it. He just comes up and goes straight face and stares at his opponent.
Well, all right.
Well, he is the Big Red Machine, so Republican only makes sense for him, right? Like, I thought it was funny. That's fuck good. You guys. That's all right, I came in with the hard hitting facts.
So this movie was 88, which is the end of the Reagan presidency. But I think it was, to me, it felt more like the 90s. You know what the 90s were time for, don't you? It was time for clacks. So.
I own it. Let's go.
So
that's the first Sean L. of the night, the Sean L. joke.
Jeremy has this thing where I think more than anything, don't keep your emotions inside about what Jeremy says, okay? Because
just let it loose.
He's gonna keep doing it. You need to be the voice of reason with these goddamn references that he makes, okay? He does it with no type of bearing on the show at all. He does this every single show. It drives our listeners insane.
Were you on to me when I said I think it's the 90s?
I was there. Is he gonna go for it?
Yes, he will.
Twin Galaxies.
There's a handful of references that trigger Sean Laskowitz, and one of them is clacks, where you'll get a shut the fuck up, man. Leave us alone. Meow, 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 meow. It's the 90s. It's time for clacks. Great game. So, this movie, They Live, is actually based on a short story by Ray Nelson called 8 O'Clock in the Morning, oddly enough, that was written in the 60s. But a fun little fact I found about the movie is for years after the film's release, and even into the movie's DVD commentary, Roddy Piper maintained that the film was based on an actual incident from the 1950s in which a company manufactured a TV that planted subliminal messages in women's brains, instructing them to buy and make extravagant purchases. Piper was unaware that the quote-unquote documentary he had seen, La Affaire Brunswick, which came out in 1978, was in fact a comedy short. So Roddy Piper saw this 30-minute comedy spoof and thought this was what the movie was based on. So God bless Roddy Piper, everyone. He's been hit so many times in the head.
So
the film opens up with a down-and-out Roddy Piper. Now, Roddy Piper plays Nada in this movie. You never hear his name actually spoken, but it's supposed that it's named after the main character from 8 O'Clock in the Morning called George Nada. So, nada, nothing.
I did not know that.
There you go. This is what you're here for, quality time. The fun, hard-hitting facts.
Now, I was looking at the other trivia that supposedly before Roddy signed on, John Carpenter actually wanted actor Udo Kier to play the lead.
Ew.
So
this is just a
otherwise known as the Dracula and Frankenstein from the Andy Warhol films. So.
Yes, you have to fuck the gallbladder. Yes. Fucking Udo Kier.
Which is totally lying because I'm just doing another Shawnee joke. So,
Sean,
no.
Sean, what's your Mount Rushmore of Udo Kier films?
He was in Blade, wasn't he?
He was in Blade, yes.
And a Madonna video.
And Johnny Mnemonic.
He was.
Just one more run, Johnny. Ew.
Probably the top three of gay German men ever in famous gay German men. So
I know. Other than Hitler, am I right? Oh, okay.
He was a sensitive man.
So Roddy heads to the welfare line. He tries to get a job. He explains that he's from Denver, Colorado for the last 10 years, but everything dried up. They closed 10 banks. And the lady looks at him very displeased, and she goes, "There's nothing available for you right now." Pretty sad. I'm sorry, Jeremy. You were writhing.
I was doing the gay Hitler to Sean. So
gay Hitler.
There's videos where you watch it, and he is just like barely Heil. He's like, and the gay Heil. You know, it's like whatever. So.
Yeah, I listen. You know
when you're Heiling all day, you just get kind of tired. You know,
don't you hate when you're exhausted from Heiling all day, and you're just like,
I just barely move my hand like this.
Yeah, you know, that's my biggest fear.
I'm sorry I was making fun of Hitler in front of Sean. So
no offense taken.
Yes. Now, Sean Laskowitz, you are Jewish as fuck, right?
No, that's... I might be. Today I'm not.
Get a little bit closer on that mic. Pull that a little
Today
bit
Today I'm not.
You brought bagels. You were eating a bagel.
Yeah,
that's
yes.
Awesome.
Now, next we see Roddy walking down the street, and we got a little audio clip here where he runs into the street preacher.
Their mouths are full of bitterness and curses, and in their paths...
Is this where he ruin and misery, quotes Ezekiel 17? God is
not before Ezekiel 25:17.
Yes.
I drive around with this playing in my car, this song.
I mean, if we're being honest, that music is like good, just like walking around music. Like, what are you doing right now? I'm actually just getting medications for my dog. She's very sick. Anyway, let's hear what the old street preacher has to say, because I think he's doing a pretty good job here. Really converting some souls.
They have recruited the rich and the powerful, and they have blinded us to the truth. Our human spirit is corrupted. Why do we worship greed? Because outside the limit of our sight, feeding off us, perched on top of us from birth to death, are our owners. Our owners, they have us.
Did you
they
see the background that looks like the they church from Prince masters. Of Darkness?
It does look like
it.
This.
Looks like it.
You, yeah.
All around you.
Now the cops show up to bust up the preacher's party and ostensibly end his little street message there. You know, a black guy can't do anything on the streets. It doesn't matter if it's the 80s now. You know, it's just, you know, it's tough. It is tough being a person of color at any time.
Even if you're blind.
Even
and,
if you're
and
blind.
And wearing the priestly robe, so.
Yeah, that's the worst part. He's like, I don't even know that I'm black. What do you mean? Like that. As
Clayton just... Bixby.
Now, I think the Carpenter really, really hit the nerve because if you'd ever read the book Subliminal Seduction from like 1973.
Oh, I love that book. No idea what it is.
Is a bestseller. It was advertising. It's obvious to anybody that actually... studies it that you'll take even a simple glass with ice cubes and they will literally airbrush in like little dicks and bodies and stuff. And it's totally manufactured, whereas if it's more subtle, you'll have your cigarette ads up on billboards and it's like it's a guy and two chicks together and you're going ha, 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 and there's like one cigarette that's like raised out of the package, like,
yeah.
Oh, this one cigarette is all you need, you know. So
well, that is the core of the movie, is subliminal messaging and stuff, and they take it to an extreme in this film, but it is very much true. We are being bombarded by all types of advertisement and media, even more so than when this movie was created.
And the thing is, I don't understand how, like, normal advertising just makes me want to do heroin and meth all the time.
I know, so. And there's barely any, like, meth ads these days, you know? That's how good meth is.
I just want to give all my money. I don't even want to work. I just want to, you know, start sucking cock all the time and, you know, and get done with this cock so I can get just more meth and heroin.
Right.
So.
Blame it on the meth, Jeremy.
All right. It takes a little longer. I pretend as if I ain't enjoying it.
Roddy then heads to a construction site so he can try to get a day laborer job. The guy gets him the job, even though they says it's a union job, and they definitely take a shot at the unions. When they look over, he's like, it's a union job, and he looks over at all the Teamsters, and they're all fucking basically rolling dice and having a fucking powwow in the corner. Sean, how do you feel that unions were shown in this part of the movie?
They were portrayed accurately. We will hire drifters from Colorado. As long as you can pick up a box, we got you.
I see that you have a very 80s haircut with your mullet. You're definitely hired.
I see. So. That mullet says, I'll do just enough work to keep my job today. I like it. You're in.
no lying. When I was part of the Carpenters Union, part of our job was sleeping in a small room in the basement, and even at a certain point the lights turned off automatically while we were taking a nap. So
Jerry, you were part of the Carpenters Union?
Oh yes,
the band?
Yes. I won't say
the
which
Karen Carpenters Union.
Yes. At any time we had to come up and sing I Say Goodbye to Love to any employee of this company.
Was David Koresh upstairs?
Yeah, we're going to raise the dead. Oh, shoot, the ATF's here. Get a gun in your hand. So,
all right. So it shows Roddy working during the day. He's digging frantically, showing off his good old muscles. And I'll give it to you. Roddy's at the height of his physical prime right now in They Live.
Oh,
he's
definitely juicing.
He's fucking real roided out. He meets his good old friend, Keith David, who's playing the character Frank. And you guys might know Keith David, probably most famously from the movie Something About Mary. He plays the father. What are you going to do with the Frank's Beats?
He will always be... Childs from The Thing.
Yes, what's Childs that? From The Thing. That is my personal, probably favorite.
I ain't
Keith
going
David
with Childs. Role. I'll go with Windus.
So he meets him and he goes, Chesterfield is right over on 4th Street. And he kind of shrugs him off, saying, because he realizes that Roddy is homeless and doesn't have a place to live. So Roddy then follows him down the street and he goes, hey man, I don't like people following me places. And I don't join up with nobody till I see where he's going.
little bit of trivia is Keith David. He's a pretty big black guy. He's pretty intimidating.
Yeah, yeah.
When he goes to shows, he still has a bodyguard there because he's probably met too many stupid crackers that start shit with him. So
I can imagine it. You know, he's.
And it's probably because of this movie. It's like, put these on. And after a 5-minute fight, you know, somebody's stupid enough, like, I want to fight Keith David. It's like, no. No, he's an actor.
So, actually, John Carpenter wrote this role specifically for Keith David. Because yes. He remembered how good he was in The Thing as Childs. And he only had one person in mind for it. It was
And
him.
Who's the other person that's in almost every John Carpenter film in this?
George Buck Flower.
Yes.
Do you know who that is? The homeless man?
The
yes.
They said if I wear this, I'm the president.
He really is in every one of them. And you're going to hear a lot more from him coming up soon.
And for some reason, also Back to the Future.
Yep. So. Yeah. Good stuff. Do you think, Jeremy, you've been to the Monster Cons before. When you met Keith David, is he more recognized for his roles in like The Thing and this stuff, or is it the show Gargoyles? What do you think he's most?
Dead Presidents.
Is he the voice of Spawn? Is he the most recognized for? What do you think?
I don't know for sure. I would hope it's The Thing, and maybe followed by Something About Mary, two very popular movies.
Here's my Mount Rushmore of Keith David. It's gonna be The Thing, They Live, Something About Mary, and then the show on HBO, Spawn. The show Spawn. Because he was the best Spawn, in my opinion. What else are you throwing in the mix?
I always liked Denzel as the Spawn anyway, so.
Denzel
is Washington.
The Spawn.
Michael Jai White.
Michael.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it was Michael. I thought it was Denzel.
He thought it was. Wait a minute. You thought Michael Jai White and Denzel Washington are the
same
person.
I can't tell the difference between certain blacks.
Oh, my God. Oh, Jeremy, you are in rare form today, sir. So, he follows him on foot, and Keith David, a.k.a. Frank, takes him to a fun outdoor shanty town where they meet Gilbert. Gilbert basically gets a hot meal in him. They have a little sit down, and Roddy tells him that Frank tells Roddy that he's got family out in Detroit that he hasn't seen in months. Everything's shutting down. And Roddy tells him that he tries not to get down on himself, and he follows the rules, and he generally has just a bright outlook on the future. You know, Roddy's just like, he's just like, you know, it's bad right now, but it's gonna get better. You know what I mean there, Frankie? So later in the night, he sees a TV that kind of cuts in this weird message, and we have a little audio clip because they're all sitting outside with the homeless folks, and this little audio clip kind of interrupts our regularly scheduled broadcast.
Recolored in seven luscious hues. Just...
Our impulses are being redirected. We are living in an artificially induced state of consciousness that resembles sleep.
Oh, goddamn hacker, that second damn night that asshole's cut in.
The movement was begun 8 months ago by a small group of scientists who discovered, quite by accident, the signals being sent through...
Things giving me a headache.
Yeah, tell me about it. Us took the hackers months to figure out how to do this.
The poor and the underclass are growing. Racial justice and human rights are non-existent. They have created a repressive society, and we are their unwitting accomplices.
He's a robot,
and the whole time
rests with the annihilation.
The whole time it's going on, the blind preacher is literally lip syncing every word of the transmission that's coming out.
He probably wrote it.
You think so? Do you think he's the author? Is he ghostwriting?
Ghostwriting.
Fucking classic white people move. You understand? Like, black people write something, the whites get up there, they fucking perform it like it's their own, and meanwhile, Muddy Waters is getting no credit for Elvis's great work. So, that crazy broadcast comes through, and the homeless people kind of turn it off and goes, blow it out your ass. Gilbert then takes the preacher across the street to a small church from the shanty town, and they head into that small building. And Roddy is a little suspect of this. He's kind of checking it out. He's looking at him. He's like, that's kind of weird, wouldn't you think? In the morning, he confronts Gilbert about what he was doing out there. And Gilbert kind of lies and says, oh, they let us use the soup kitchen until late last night. The broadcast cuts it back in again in the morning, saying, we have to break their signal. So Roddy, or Nada, heads back over to the church. And he can hear the beautiful singing of like a church choir in there. And it looks literally like he goes into the room where the preacher had been with Gilbert last night. And it is fucking literally, it looks like a meth lab in there, right? Like, it looks like they're cooking good old fashioned Sudafed meth.
It looks like my basement.
Yeah.
Gilbert or Buford?
Buford. Classic Buford reference. So he kind of looks around the room and peeks into where the choir's singing, and he sees that it's not a choir at all. It's actually just a tape recording that's playing loud music while Gilbert's talking with two other people. So Roddy goes back to the back room, and he's looking around, and he kind of pulls back like this part of the wall and sees that there's all these boxes hidden in there, and he's thinking, oh yeah, this is going to be my payday right there. It's going to get old Nada back on his feet. Am I right? So he's about to leave, and he puts back the wall, and all of a sudden the preacher sneaks up on him, which is, okay, a blind preacher, really? Is he going to sneak up on you? It seems a little ridiculous, but he sneaks up on him, and Roddy thinks he thinks this is clearly going to be his payday. The preacher comes over and touches his face, like, excessively. He's just like, let me see you there, boy. Like, oh. And then he's like, I got to get out of here. And he goes, you'll be back. So Roddy leaves the church, and there's a chopper all of a sudden circling from above, which, you know, he's a little bit worried about. Roddy then gets a pair of binoculars from a fellow bum and then starts spying on Gilbert from a distance. Keith David, or Frank, comes over and tells him that he's out of his mind and he needs to mind his own business. He sees them loading up all the boxes from inside and throwing them into a car to get them out of there. Now, later that night, the cops come down and surround the church. And then they also come in, like, fucking full riot gear and basically destroy the shanty town. Like, fucking World War III out there. I thought this was a pretty cool scene of the movie where it's just, like, it goes, like, total fucking mayhem, right? Okay. Yes, no, you're not going to add anything. Okay.
But I was just going to say that I'm glad that the good guy character wasn't played by Tom Arnold.
You think so?
He really reminded me of Tom Arnold, so, yeah.
Who?
The lead good guy.
Roddy Piper?
No, the other guy.
Gilbert,
yeah. Yeah.
He is kind of a
poor man's Tom Arnold. Yeah.
The phrase poor man's Tom Arnold.
Tom Arnold less the cocaine, so...
Well, now, well, who would ever want that? I mean, I'm a pro cocaine Tom Arnold fan. So you're saying Peter Jason is a low budget
Tom Arnold.
Peter Jason. Yeah. I don't think he would agree with that.
Wasn't he in another John Carpenter? Am I thinking of, like, maybe Prince of Darkness or something?
He was in a lot of big movies. Have you ever heard of the movie Arachnophobia?
Mm.
Or Mortal Kombat?
No.
Or 48 Hours?
Oh, okay. 48 Hours. There you go. Yeah,
that was pretty good. Have you ever heard of a little movie called A Quest for Rainbows? I don't know what that is.
I think I watch that every other day.
He's in a lot of NCIS episodes.
That was a porno, right?
Yes.
Quest for Rainbows. So.
Have you ever heard of a TV movie called The Fuzz?
Also a porno.
First of all, this guy's IMDb is amazing.
Hey, if it isn't cop rock, I don't know what cop show it is.
So. Have you ever played a game called Gears of War 2? Hello. Played Dizzy. Okay,
Dizzy.
I don't know. This guy has. You know what? He works his ass off, though. If I'm looking through his thing here. Oh, you know what he was? He was also Farmer McDonald in Jackie Chan Adventures. That's the Saturday morning kids TV show about Jackie Chan.
Now you know.
But yeah, I guess maybe he is a poor man's Tom. You know, if Jason...
Oh, wait, here it comes.
If Peter Jason had fucked Roseanne Arnold, then we probably, you know, we wouldn't have Tom Arnold right now, you know?
Who was he on Roseanne? Was it like Roseanne's like cousin or brother?
Yeah, it was some weird role. He's like, hey, what's going on? It's me, Tom Arnold again.
Oh, Sean, which Freddy movie had Tom Arnold in it?
Freddy's Dead?
Freddy's Dead, yes. It? I think we just threw that out. Did we watch it together?
No, I just...
Yeah. He knows all the Freddy movies.
So Alice Cooper was also in there, wasn't he?
So the cops are busting up everything, and Gilbert and the preacher escape before they show up. But the cops doze the shanty town. They shake down everyone. They grab the homeless. Roddy grabs one of his homeless buds, and they go to a nearby house. And there's other homeless people hiding within there. And they're kind of just peeking through the window shades as they're just helplessly watching their way of life be destroyed. Now, morning comes.
There's a thing where you see what's his name? The bum guy. When the cops come up on him, but you don't see anything after that, so you're thinking, oh, he got it. Mm-hmm. He got it bad.
Or did he?
Or did he?
Or is he one of them?
Another thing I wanted to say, when he comes into the basement with all the sunglasses lenses being prepped, I would love to Swede the film, and instead of the sunglasses, it's tables full of Nintendo Virtua Boys. So...
That's
great. I would love it. I would love it if instead of glasses, you had to wear Virtua Boy everywhere. And that's honestly, We'll get into it later, but it, one of the effects of wearing the sunglasses later, it does make you feel like it really wastes you and, like, fatigues you.
Kind of like Virtual Boy.
Virtual Boy fucks you up, dude. I swear to God. Listen, I had Virtual Boy. That's a Nintendo product that was short-lived. I owned a Virtual Boy. Me and Sean got it, and it was like fucking liquid cocaine the first, like, 48 hours we owned it.
We were trying to stay up all night. Yeah, and then we get tired, like, all right, I need another shot. Mario Tennis.
You go and play Mario Tennis, and you be like, fucking wired again.
Eric's exact quote, man, I could jump out of a fucking window right now. What the hell is Nintendo selling? Why would a kid say that?
It's one of the hardest things I've ever done. And honestly, fucking Virtua Tennis was my first gateway drug, okay?
The newest in Nintendo quality with the color red. And red.
Red and black.
Waterworld.
I knew that was going to be your next reference. Waterworld is a tough play. Is a tough play. I remember Virtua Boxing and I remember Mario Tennis. Those being the two games that were actually worth playing on that system. Waterworld was like a boat, right? A lot of the time that you just drove places, and it was weird.
You either get black or red.
Yes, just it's a game made for Harley Quinn only,
or the Wolfpack.
Ooh, NW. I wasn't ready for an NWO Wolfpack reference. So the morning comes and Roddy returns to the church and he goes to go find those hidden boxes left behind.
I steal from churches also.
Yeah, yes, I like it. He looks at this is my opportunity to finally steal from the church that I've been waiting for. So he goes
second only to trespass. So
He goes and takes one of the boxes and then walks away and takes them into a nearby alley. He opens up the box and just finds that it's filled with pairs of glasses. And he's clearly frustrated by this. Like, gosh, you know what? Gosh darn it. I remember when I fought Mr. T in WrestleMania 3 and now I got nothing but glasses to show for it. Oh, man. And so Roddy takes one of the pairs of glasses and then he kind of shoves them into a trash can and covers them up with some trash. And he starts to walk down the street. The glasses, he notices, kind of make everything look black and white. And he sees a billboard and in large letters it says, "Obey." And he walks around another one and he sees the billboard and it's like a lovely lady in a swimsuit and he throws the glasses on. It says marry and reproduce really large. Then he sees all these other advertisements everywhere that say no independent thought, consume, buy, watch TV, stay asleep. And he goes over to a magazine stand and everything is just opens up the pages of the magazine, all types of hidden messages, right? It's just saying all types of obey, watch TV, buy things. Then the most shocking moment of the movie up until now, he sees a guy walk up to the stand and he just has like this fucking horrid distorted face that literally looks like it's like Freddy Krueger if he had giant bulging like iguana eyes, I guess is the best way to describe it. Sean, describe your feelings the first time you saw one of the aliens from this film.
It looks like somebody's head fell in the cheese dip in 57.
I have only two words, formaldehyde face.
So he's clearly bewildered. The guy at the stand says, "Hey, are you going to pay for that?" And he looks at the guy's hand. It's like filled with money and it says, "This is your God." I thought that was a pretty cool little hidden message.
I want to speak up for the aliens because, you know, although they're ugly, I still think they kind of look better than the guy named Seal. So
yeah, still better looking than 90s pop star Seal. Yeah. So you're saying that the aliens in this movie could all fuck Heidi Klum? Like that they have looks.
I think they still have a chance. So yeah.
So
you know, part of your face looks like a baboon's butt, but still, you got a good chance. You know, if you can sing something, I could pay you to a kiss from a rose on the floor.
Obey, 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 so, obey.
Sleep.
Yeah. He also does see a spinning little radar somewhere that's just broadcasting the word sleep, sleep, which doesn't make sense. Can he hear that because he's wearing the glasses? Makes no sense at all. These aren't hearing devices at all.
The last subliminal commercial that drove me crazy because I know I saw it, but I don't remember because it was so fast. They had a cat and he was running across the camera and there was word on the side of the cat. And I'm like, wasn't that fucking obvious? It's like, I wanted my DVR to run it back again. It's like, they actually put a word on the side of the cat's fur.
What did the cat, what did it say?
It said, like, eat or buy or something.
Stuka? It said Stuka?
Yeah, it said Stuka. So basically, yeah, they kill Geraldo.
They subliminated, they subliminally planted eat pussy in your head.
All of a sudden, I was off to see a whore. So, you know. Said I was a bore.
And that's what fixed Jeremy's gayness. That was actually when Jeremy went to that church reassignment class where they were like, oh, we have some questions about you. It was just subliminal cats that say eat everywhere.
Now all I listen to is Green Day. So
Roddy then goes down the street and he enters a small supermarket and he's just completely dumbfounded. On the TV, he can see an alien politician actually giving a speech with the big fucking sign behind him that says obey. And he's giving like the typical politician speech. And he goes, it figures, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. And then we get to see some of the magic that is Roddy Piper in this film as we pick up here.
There are no limits.
It figures it would be something like this. Our nation, our
ideals. Oh. Lady bumps into him.
Excuse me.
Clearly an alien.
You know, you look like your head fell on the cheese dip back in 1957.
I got the year right. I'm proud of myself.
You look like your head fell in the cheese dip in 1957.
Is this improvised or is this on the script?
I think this is Roddy's own doing. This is him sprinkling the magic at this point.
Was Chocolate Man in the script in Dawn of the Dead? I just really want to know this.
So we'll play some more as it progresses, his conversation with this random alien lady in the supermarket here.
Is she legal?
You're okay. This one, real fucking ugly. You see, I take these glasses off. She looks like a regular person, doesn't she, huh? Put them back on, formaldehyde face. That's what we got.
That's enough out of you. Get out or I call the cops.
God.
By the way, just imagine your people in the supermarket. I would fucking be laughing hysterically. You realize if there was a giant wrestler the size of Roddy Piper, and be like, formaldehyde face right there. I would shit my pants laughing in real life. Oh, like, at first I was like, hey, that's disrespectful. But also hilarious, okay? I real recognize as real. So,
oh, the cops! You know what you need? You need a Brazilian plastic surgeon!
He falls over.
I've got one that can see.
Oh, shit.
Oh, shit. And so she picks up her little wristwatch and she's talking into it like she's Dick Tracy. And she goes, this, I've got one that can see. And Roddy is starting to freak out a little bit now. And now all of them in the supermarket are following him out.
Caucasian male. Doesn't appear armed. Wearing sunglasses.
I don't like this one bit. Not one bit.
I've had a desktop theme before, and I think that was the start menu.
I don't like this one bit.
Everybody's like, what the fuck did you do to the computer? I had a friend. I was on the 5:30 shift, 5:30 a.m., all right? This guy came on to work, and it was around 5 o'clock, and he was like, man, I was watching this movie the other day. This guy had some glasses, and he put them on, and then he saw aliens. Has anybody seen this? Everybody's like, no, no. I was like, I've seen this. I know of this film.
Yes.
We became instant friends.
So you're saying that this movie is so significant to you, Sean, that you actually made a lifelong friend because of it, because they just brought it up. You're like, I know about this movie. How do you know about it? Oh, I'm wearing a shirt that says it right away.
This is half of my wardrobe.
I only wear They Live in Roddy Piper gear.
Wear kilts.
So they all start after him slowly and kind of walk him out of there. Roddy starts to run, and then all of a sudden he's blindsided by a police officer who kind of like shoulder tackles him to the ground. And he goes, hey, where'd you get those glasses? And the cop explains to him, he's like, hey, man, you look as bad to us as we do to you, okay? And Roddy thinks he's going to go quietly, and all of a sudden gives him a fucking short arm clothesline and fucking takes that cop off of his feet. He goes over to the other cop and fucking hits him with like a 4-hit combo, like boom, boom, boom. And then he grabs the gun and blows away the other cop. So within 20 seconds of being, you have to realize the flip in how he's changed, okay? Less than 10 minutes ago, he had a bright outlook on life. You understand? Like, he was talking, he was just like, I just try to follow the rules. He's shot a police officer now, within 10 minutes later, all right? So, he goes, so, you bastards die just like we do. And the other one gets up from behind him and nightsticks him in the back. He also shoots that guy. So now he's a double cop killer within 10 minutes after having a bright outlook on life. So he goes into the squad car, he grabs a shotgun, he grabs his glasses, so now he's armed to the teeth as he goes to this next scene where he walks into a local bank.
Can I say this is probably the worst movie to watch Flacca on, you know?
Flacca?
Yeah.
Jerry, you're a big Flacca fan?
Whacka Flacca.
No, I'm not talking about the Ravens quarterback. I'm talking about the drug
I know Flacca. About Flacca, yeah. Where you chew people's faces off.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe that's what it is, because when you see, like, when you do Flacca, you are trying to create the aliens that are depicted in that film by chewing people's faces off.
No, I mean, there's a lot of triggers for, like, people that go completely batshit insane. And mine was like the number 666. And I'm sure that there's been at least 100 people in America that's seen this movie that this was like their trigger to just go batshit insane. As long as they didn't go like, you know, like homicidal crazy fucking insane, you know?
Yeah, who would do that?
So. Every 10 years, clock's ticking, so.
Jerry's about to snap any moment now. We don't even know. I mean, he's.
What is that, Dr. Giggles?
Man, I miss Dr. Giggles, a.k.a. Durant.
He was supposed to come to Monster Mania, and he died a day before.
Larry Drake.
Yeah. I even made my L.A. Law new movie clip for him, so.
He was going to sign my Darkman mask.
Yeah, I really like him as Durant from Darkman. He's very good in that.
Durant.
Liam Neeson's first action film, I'll say.
And probably one of the best retards that ever played on L.A. Law, so.
Yes.
Retard.
Because he didn't go full retard, that's why.
A fucking stuffed animal.
Him and his girlfriend Amanda Plummer as a retard as well, so.
All right, so now Roddy Piper has 5 stars.
Yes. In Grand Theft Auto, there's 5 stars. He's killed 2 cops. Everybody is after him. He walks into a local bank, and we get probably the most iconic line from this entire movie, which he ad-libbed for this scene right here.
That's the guy.
Looks around. He sees aliens mixed in with humans everywhere.
The music.
Got a shotgun in his hands.
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Oh, shit.
Yes! Immediately starts a giant gunfight. Just starts blowing away the aliens in the room.
Did he kill any humans? We don't know.
I don't know, but that one that gets the teller that gets it gets fucking splattered.
That's like Flyboy.
There's one that's kind of phoning him in. He's like, I see him. He's got a shotgun. And then all of a sudden he looks at this last alien and says this, which I also really enjoy.
White male, 30s, long hair.
Mama don't like tattletales.
And he disappears. He uses the watch to disappear and teleport the fuck out of there before Roddy blows him away.
Now, it's going to be, at least 2 or 3 more years before Apple makes the smartwatch that makes you disappear through the time tunnels?
Yes.
So,
yeah. The only difference between the aliens and us is that their Steve Jobs lived 50 years before ours. That's good. I like it. I personally am a Samsung guy. But hey, you know, to each their
own. Samsung.
Shang Tsung. Good Shang Tsung reference, Sean. Now
Goro
wins.
Eddie Goro.
Yeah, I just watched Ready Player One today. I'd never watched it. I actually really liked Ready Player One.
I did.
There was a part in the movie where I don't know if it was just my family not being home today and watching a movie completely unbastardized without my children harassing me.
That using you like a trampoline.
But the part where he fights Godzilla as a Gundam and the Iron Giant joins in, it brought a tear of joy to my eye. I shit you not, a tear streamed down my eye. I was like, this movie's beautiful. This is everything I wanted in a film.
The only thing that could have made it better is if he actually took off his magic, like cutting things, and cut him in half by throwing him at the enemy. So,
what?
You haven't seen the things of what's his name? It's not Guyver Man. It's
the Guyver
Ultraman,
right?
Ultraman. Yeah,
just throwing stuff out there.
Yeah, he in the old things, he actually took like a magic thing, kind of like Voltron, and threw it and cut the creature's heads off or cut them in half all the time. It was awesome. So nice. Completely gore filled for children.
So Roddy then heads outside of the bank to the alleyway in the rear and sees there's like a floating kind of drone looking down at him. He goes, "Oh, who are you, little fella? Come to tell him where I am, are you? Not nice." And he shoots it with a shotgun and takes it out.
I like the fact you make him sound more Scottish. So,
"Who are you, little fella?" This Canadian man who played a Scotsman for a living.
Before you learn how to use this, you must learn how to use this.
If you don't,
Roddy Piper.
If you don't think America is the greatest country on earth, you need not look further than Roddy Piper, because only in America could you be a Canadian man that goes to America and makes a living off of being a Scottish man that has no Scottish accent. You understand? He has no accent that says he is Scottish, but he played a Scotsman for years because they were like, "Oh, Americans are so dumb. They'll never know the difference. I got an accent, and that's just how they think they'll talk." Like that.
You know, we want to know who's second to me from Roddy Piper.
Who's that?
The guy who played Schultz on Hogan's Heroes.
That's your second. That's your top one right there.
Well, not Bob Crane, the guy that ran the camp.
Okay.
Bob is Colonel Schultz, a Jew. Is running a camp for things. That's what I love about America. So.
That is beautiful. You know, there are beautiful things in America.
I did that just for Sean, and I'm sorry.
So another cop then goes to confront Roddy in there, and he tells him to drop his gun because he sees that he's a human, and he goes, "Beat your feet." And the cop gets out of there.
And he was a pussy cop,
yeah,
too.
He was. He was just like, a real alien would have tried to put up a fight. He's not down for the cause. Anyway, he then goes into a parking garage and basically abducts a lovely red-haired woman who and like carjacks her. Again, fucking sirens at 9, right? So he meets the very lovely Holly, played by Meg Foster, and hops in her BMW and puts the seat low and then tells her to drive him to her house. Correct? Am I missing anything there? You abducted a woman and just said, "Take me home." You know, dating in this day and age is so hard. You know, that's probably the most difficult part.
Oh, I forgot to mention, I didn't realize the producer of this was actually Larry Franco.
Really? James Franco's older brother?
No, he...
That's what I was...
I think he's produced ever since then every single Tarantino film, and he was one of the cops that chased down Buscemi when he got shot, in Reservoir Dogs when they're chasing after Buscemi in the streets.
Very interesting.
Oh no, and he comes out of the bathroom too to try to shoot Vince and Jackson. He's the guy that comes out of the bathroom with the big gun. So,
cool. All right, I get you. And he misses all the shots. Yeah. Oh, that's cool. All right, that's the guy.
That's a miracle.
Who knows? Who knows?
I'm pretty sure that's him. Otherwise, I'm completely wrong. So, he might have been the guy that was the Norwegian in the thing. He might have been.
Okay. So she takes him back to her place, and as they're coming in, there's some neighbors that are watching him enter. Did you notice that these neighbors are both, like, must be Weird Al enthusiasts, because they both have Hawaiian shirts on and look like Captain Lou Albano? 80s. It was the 80s. Was that a thing? I don't know. People from the 80s chime in, Quality Timers. I want to know how popular Hawaiian shirts were. Was it because of Weird Al? Was it because of it was just a time thing? I need to know. Inquiring minds need to know. And our fan base needs to know. Please share that with us.
Did you have a Weird Al shirt? You had a Hawaiian shirt, didn't you?
I have many Hawaiian shirts. My dream, I mean, I think it's, listen, it's like Homer Simpson said, you're either gay or you're a big fat party animal. Luckily, I'm both. So it is the perfect attire for me. So he sits down and kind of collapses in front of the couch and he goes, these glasses are like a drug. You come down hard. He tries to apologize to her, but she's very much kind of like coaching him through the situation. He's like, you're in control. You're the man with the gun. And he's like, oh, it's not like that. And he's just like, oh, no, it's literally like that. You just abducted a woman, Roddy. I mean, this isn't, this is nuts talk you're talking about. So, she says that that he's in charge, that he's got the guns. He tries to explain to her, but he sounds like a fucking lunatic, as anyone would, wielding a gun that just blew away like five police officers and a bank full of people. So he kind of starts to like pass out because he's so fatigued from the glasses, and she kind of sees it as an opportunity to get up, and she goes, oh. And as she gets up, he goes, don't fuck with me. With his eyes closed, she goes over and says she's just getting a drink. She comes back with a glass and a bottle of wine, pours herself a nice tall glass, and she's sitting there. They're making small talk, and he's just trying to tell her. He's like, oh, so what do you do? What's your name? Where do you work? And he finds out that Holly works at Cable 54, and he goes, oh, that's where they're sending out the transmission. Oh, look, I can show you the TV. So he walks over to go turn on the TV. She uses that opportunity to whack him over the head. And I don't know what she hits him with, because I watched this over and over again. Wisdom would say she's still holding the wine bottle, and then that's what breaks over his head. But if you look at what's in her hand, it's like something white that looks like a candlestick that she hits in the back of his head. I swear to God, I watched this scene like four or five times, and I could not make out what she hit him with.
It wasn't a wine bottle.
It doesn't look like a wine bottle. It looks like a candlestick or something.
That's like a regular night for him, getting bashed in the face with something.
Yeah, yes. I was just like, oh, you mean you kidnapped somebody and they didn't immediately just think you were a completely sane and rational person? Good work.
I think she was pretty gorgeous in this, and she had something weird about her eyes that makes them almost seem like they sparkle.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I seen her at the like last shows, and she has aged so amazingly bad.
It's, I also,
like, I can't say amazing.
I can't confirm this, but as I recall, I think she had green eyes, which must be a John Carpenter fetish, because that's the entire movie, Big Trouble in Little Chinatown, is about women with green eyes. So I think that's just his thing, right? Like, he finds it, he was just like, oh, green eyes, you're fucking in. Hey, do you like synthesizer music?
Dark Synth.
So,
nah, she was in the new zombie film 31 also. So she's still working and, you know, working it and everything. She looks old.
She's
almost 70. I mean, come on.
Would you still kidnap her?
Yeah, I would still. She's still kidnappable.
I gotta say, for 70 years old, she looks great.
She does.
Looks great. So.
Did you see the picture of the woman who was in Top Gun from with Tom Cruise, like the main girl from it?
Val Kilmer.
She looks fucking rough. Hold on, look, I'll show you.
I hate to say it reminds me of Kathleen Turner from Dumb and Dumber 2. Where it's like, wait, you can't be her. She had a happy face tattoo on her butt. Oh my gosh.
What?
Serial mom?
Yes, Kathleen Turner.
Let me show you this right now, because there was a meme that was circling this week about the lady who played from Top Gun. And here she is now.
No, there was another picture of her that just looked gosh awful.
I mean, she's... Just, I mean, I'd still fuck.
You know, it's like they say, the camera adds like 50 years and 100 pounds and make you look horrible. So
the camera adds diabetes. Everybody knows that.
That's why I try to look like the yellow-eyed devil from Legion. So, you know.
So
I look like Fautau or whatever his name is.
So she whacks him on the head, and he then in turn tumbles through the window and like falls probably like 25, 30 feet or something like that, and has to limp his way through the night until he gets to an alley where he sleeps kind of curled up in the cold, which you're like thinking, oh man, this is really rough. I'm like, no, this is how he's been living the last 4 months of his life. Like, this is where he's comfortable.
He's
in
a
dirty alley. This is a hobo lifestyle
with
he's living.
Shotgun.
So morning comes and he goes back to his day job to go see Frank, and he goes, what are you doing here, man? You gotta get out of here. How many people did you kill? And he goes,
not people.
I love that line though. Like, he just looks at not people.
I almost want to kill somebody just to say that to you, Eric.
can I say one of my favorite lines from Return of the Living Dead?
Yes.
Not people, brains.
Why do you like brains?
It makes the pain go away.
I like any movie where you get to see Linnea Quigley's sweet jumblies. So he goes down, he goes back to the original alley where he had left the rest of the sunglasses, because now they're lost. So he actually has to break into a dump truck that is now collecting the trash, which was relatively easy. The dump truck then goes and compacts, but the back door's open, so it dumps him out with the rest of the trash in the alleyway. Another good union job. Anyway, they really shit on the union's jobs, like their work ethic throughout this film, which I enjoy the fuck out of. So Frank then confronts him in the alley and gives him a week's pay. He's like, it's a week's pay. It's the best I could do. And, you know, Roddy is pretty happy about it. But he tells him that he needs to try on the glasses. And then starts the fucking... one of the best fight scenes you'll ever see in a movie. And I say best fight scenes. This is a 5 minute long fight scene that gets started over him not wanting to wear glasses. And originally when this movie was written, it called for a 20 second fight scene, but Keith David and Roddy Piper worked in John Carpenter's backyard studio for 3 weeks on this fight scene. And yes. When they actually went to go do it, they decided, hey, man, let's really hit each other. Let's really go at it. So the only thing they didn't do was actually do a crotch shot. So there was no real low blow that happened, and there was no real punches to the face. But all the body shots, real stuff that's going back and forth between those guys. Mm. Carpenter liked it so much that when they filmed it, it was actually a 12-minute long fight scene. And he, instead of making it a 20-second one, actually kept 5 whole minutes of it in this movie, which is pretty good. I mean, and it's wrought with fucking suplexes, biting, fucking backbreakers.
Window smashing.
I mean, it really shows Roddy's talents as a wrestler, but more importantly, a wrestler that can also put a less experienced person over, which is, I mean, it makes Keith David look like a fucking monster through this whole thing, because Roddy's the one who's taking all the fucking hard bumps in this. So it just goes to show Roddy Piper, one of the greatest wrestlers of all time. That's all I was really getting at.
I see information here that says the actual location of the alley is Mercury Court between West 7th and 6th Streets and Hill and Olive Streets. And it says from photos that it hasn't changed, is just as grimy as it was in 1988.
Nice.
Yes.
So
we should fight there.
Eventually.
Hell yeah. And we'll get the big box with the sunglasses or the virtual voice.
Now, this actually was famously parodied in the show South Park. If you ever want to see it, they have the retard fight between Jimmy and Timmy. And Jimmy and Timmy have an exact recreation of this fight scene. All five minutes of glory.
Oh, so by the way, I go to the bar called the something Silk Stockings. I forget the name of it. The Bada Bing from the Sopranos. And I'm just walking around, and a Sopranos tour bus pulls up and all Sopranos fans come out, and what do they start doing? A couple of guys start reacting the scene where Gandolfini is beating the shit out of Pantoliano against this fence. It's like, what the fuck is wrong with you? And they start acting out the scenes. I'm like, this is awesome. So
that is pretty cool. We should go back. We should go to that very alley one day.
There is no back pool room in the actual Sopranos bar, though. That was made up. That was studio.
Never mind, I'm out now.
But they did have a pool table back there. It just wasn't the same room at all. And for, I guess I'm enough of a dick, and I don't care. I sat in Tony Soprano's seat when he was sitting at the bar sometimes.
Oh, so, big dick.
And what do I care? I'm from Baltimore. You know, I'll sit where I want to, hon. You know, live out the Sopranos in my mind. And I think I brought some shot glasses that said Bada Bing on it,
Jeremy,
and a t-shirt.
I am surprised that you would disrespect the legacy of this fake gangster.
He was still alive back then. The Sopranos was almost still going and everything. By the way, no nudity at the bar. They were bikinis. Bikini tops.
You know, the little known fact, people think James Gandolfini is dead right now, but he's not dead. He's actually just James the White Gandolfini now. So he's back. Good Lord of the Rings reference.
Gandalf!
I thought Jeremy was gonna get a bigger pop. I was expecting a bigger laugh out of you. I'm sorry, Quality Timers. It was my best work.
I always prefer Torgo the White.
Yeah. So
I brought your crazy bread.
So eventually, Roddy is able to get the glasses onto Frank's face, and he shows him, and he finally sees, and gets another fucking classic line. He goes, "Brother, life's a bitch." And she's back in heat. God, such...
And this movie is second only to Rocky, where another white man actually beats a black man in a fight. So
I would... I don't know who... Only in Tales of Fiction does that happen. So there. By the way, if there was a shirt that said "Life's a bitch and she's back in heat," I immediately buy it. You understand? So $6 shirts.
$6
get your fucking shit on point, because we need this. So that night, he tells Frank about the story. Frank goes and gets a hotel room with Roddy. They're posing as gay lovers. They're not, but they look like two guys that would definitely fuck each other. Like, 100%. They're both beat up. It looks like they had a fun game of rugby, and they're ready to do some weird backdoor fucking. Roddy plans their next move. They're both battered and beaten from one another, and they argue a bit, but they decide they need to find out who makes the glasses. Now, that night, he tells Frank a story about his dad, explains to him that he's not daddy's little boy anymore, and they're going to pay. Now, Gilbert ends up finding Frank the next day when he goes out to go grab some milk, and comes back up to the hotel room and tells them there's a meeting tomorrow night, and the world needs a wake-up call, and we're the ones that are going to phone it in. So... at the meeting, they get some new and improved contacts. So no more glasses. There's new and improved contacts. They just pop them in. And Gilbert explains that a lot of humans are working with the aliens. They're turning into all the pollution that they're causing is slowly turning it into a habitat that's going to be conducive for the alien way of life. He even sees Holly at the meeting, and Holly goes and starts to try to make amends with Roddy Piper. But just as everything is getting settled and they start this little meeting up, fucking the cops come and unleash all hell, gunning down everybody in the resistance force. Nada and Frank are forced to shoot their way out of the situation. They make themselves get out into an alley, and Roddy Piper and Frank shoot, I'm not lying, probably like 15 people on the way out. And there's people on the rooftops. It's like a game of Lethal Enforcers.
Reload.
Outside.
When was the scene that Holly said she had to have, she had five kids she had to feed?
Yes. Man, I got 5 kids to feed.
And I think Quato was a great actor in this as well.
Thank you for that, Jeremy.
Yeah. Start the reactor.
Jeremy, even though he was a Muppet.
Jeremy is, of course, talking about the wonderful movie Total Recall, and will be a future episode on Quality Time for sure.
Oh, I thought we were talking about Total Recall. Wait a second. We've got Martians, right?
Jerry's this far. What?
They're freaks. They're a bunch of freaks, and they want their air, but they don't want to pay for it. Fucking losers.
If you could replace one Arnold Schwarzenegger movie with Roddy Piper, what would it be?
Definitely Hercules Goes to New York.
Hercules in New York. Yeah. His
Junior.
First movie.
Pregnant Roddy.
Oh, look, I'm pregnant as all get out right now. Are you kidding me? Look at this. My belly has a child in it. I don't know. Twin?
I don't know, Herc. Maybe you can go to Times Square and we can sell some sex there.
I don't know. Roddy Piper and Danny DeVito and twins sounds pretty appealing to me, if I'm being honest. That sounds like a pretty good one.
Maybe True Lies.
Jingle All the Way.
Jingle All the Way.
Sinbad.
What if he was just a Terminator? He's just like, I need your clothes, your boots, and your,
hey,
and your
buddy.
Motorcycle.
Hey, buddy, what do you got? A dead cat in there? Fuck you, asshole!
Hey, come with me if you want to live, okay?
That was good.
That was good. I like Roddy Piper as the Terminator. It's pretty good. I need your boots, your jacket, and your motorcycle. Okay, pal?
I'll be back.
Hasta la vista, baby.
I know now why you cry.
Oh, that's the stupidest.
There's
shit.
One more chip in my head.
It's got to be destroyed, John. Don't you understand? This is the stupidest thing we've ever done.
God.
This is the stupidest fucking thing we've ever done.
It's not like me. It's a T-1000.
Cybernetic organism.
Oh, goodness. All right. So, as they're fighting everybody in the alleyway, they end up getting pinned down at the fucking end of the hall. Luckily, during the meeting, they had met a guy that had given him one of the alien watches. So, Frank starts fucking with it and is able to make a little portal that they're able to drop down and get the fuck out of that alleyway. And they find themselves in some kind of underground tunnel system that looks almost like a secret base, if you will.
And all your base are belong to us.
All your base are belong to us.
Yes.
Now, as they're looking around this underground facility, they enter a giant banquet hall where they're basically, it's the aliens and it's all the human elites from the world that are partnered with them, basically telling them how they've raised all their profits 37% this year, and there's just a range. Oh, yes, we have more money now, right? And we get to see the bum who said, blow it out your ass, that we thought was left for dead earlier in the movie. He recognizes Roddy and Childs, or should I? I'm sorry, Frank. I called him Childs from the thing. You monster. So, he goes and then shows him around the facility. He's like, oh, I didn't know you guys were part of the gig. Okay, have they showed you around yet? And he goes, no, haven't had a chance to look around. So he takes him on a little tour. He shows him that there's this giant teleport room, right? Like, they look out and it looks like it's looking into the a mass of space, and it's beaming people from this distant world or spaceship back and forth here and there. So they're kind of blown away by that. Then he takes them down to the very end of the hall where they realize they're actually in Cable 54's building right now. And this is where all the broadcasts and the subliminal messages are coming from this TV station that they've teleported to. So he goes, hey, I've never been on a TV set before. Do you think you can get us in? He's like, well, okay. And then they go try to go past the guards. And he's like, be real. Where's your IDs? And they go, right here. And the fucking Frank and Roddy go ahead and pull out fucking handguns and just blow the two guards away right there. So they're dead.
At what point do they produce Uzis?
It's coming up.
They don't have their Uzis yet.
Well, okay. They had like M6. They had Uzis in like the alleyway as they were trying to get out because that place like had an armament. Now they had handguns, and because they just killed the guards, now they have fully auto like M16s after they get this part.
I just want to say I watched this to the point yesterday until Roddy got stuck in the trash truck. And that's when the movie shut down for me. So.
Oh,
I think I've seen it like a year or two ago, so it's still semi-fresh.
So after they shoot the guards, they're trying to talk to the old bum that they know so that they can get into the TV recording studio so they can shut down this signal. And he explains to them that it's all signaled from the roof. Then I think we get one of the best scenes from the movie here, which is also featured on a underground rap album by Binary Star. But this is a pretty good little scene from the bum that has switched sides and is now allying himself with the aliens.
I thought you boys understood. It's business. That's all it is. You still don't get it, do you, boys? There ain't no countries anymore. No more good guys. They're running the whole show. They own everything, the whole goddamn planet. They can do whatever they want. What's wrong with having it good for a change? Now they're gonna let us have it good if we just help them. They're gonna leave us alone. Let us make some money. You can have a little taste of that good life too. Now I know you want it. Hell, everybody does.
You do it to your own kind.
What's the threat? We all sell out every day. Might as well be on the winning team.
And the guards show back up.
See ya, boys.
And he zaps himself and teleports out of there.
I would sell out for a teleporter.
Yeah, I mean...
Just give me that and I'll sell out.
You immediately ally with the aliens as soon as you tell me I don't have to walk anymore. Like, that's... Like that? That would be pretty dope to basically have Nightcrawler's powers the second.
Not for Genesis, hopefully.
Not Genesis Nightcrawler, where you could go through, like, four doors and that's
you're
it.
Dead.
The best part is you always get used to, like, dropping 14 feet into the time tunnel. Like, oh, shit, I broke my leg again. God.
So they try to make their way. First, they kick down the door and start gunning down fucking aliens left and right. And they go to head for the roof. Armed with M16s, Frank and Nada start just taking out anyone they see that's an alien in there. But they see that the building's also filled with tons of humans, too. They make it down hallway after hallway, being confronted by guards and fucking unloading like it's Predator in this bitch. And as they run towards the stairs, he sees Holly. He goes, Holly, come with me. Holly, come on. We got to go. We got to get up to the roof. That's where they're broadcasting the signal. And he grabs Holly by the hand and follows him. He goes, here we go. And Roddy heads up the stairway and leaves Frank and Holly behind. Holly then pulls out a handgun, puts it to Frank's head, and blows his damn ass it. Away. I'm like, damn it. Can Keith David, he at least made it through the thing, but I mean, good run in both of his John Carpenter appearances, right? I mean,
I'm pretty sure that he is the thing at the end of the thing. So.
Well, at the end of the thing, it is John Carpenter has confirmed that Childs is the thing, because if you look at Kurt Russell, he's breathing out like lots of...
I've seen these theories, like the carbon dioxide. You don't see it from him. Yeah. You don't see anything.
You don't see anything coming out of Childs' mouth. You just see regular... He's not letting out like a bunch of steam when he breathes. So the thing really is Childs at the end.
He confirmed this? Or this is a fan
that's
theory?
That's a confirmed John Carpenter theory. That's a confirmed theory by him.
I have a written version of The Thing Part 2 and them already as being on the slab, being, what's the word? Studied?
Yes.
Or what is it called when they got you at the coroner's office?
Autopsy,
yes. And both Childs and MacReady getting off the table after an autopsy and taking over people as the thing. So
that'd be pretty cool. I'm a big fan of the thing, and that is, I'm thinking that might be episode 100, because we're coming up on episode 100 this year. I think episode 100 is going to be the thing. So. Spoiler alert.
Are you sure we couldn't maybe do Overboard or Cars?
Overboard. Any Kurt Russell film other than that.
Yeah. Maybe Captain Jack.
I actually recently watched Overboard. Got to be honest with you, in 2017, there's some problematic things that are happening in this film.
How about we just do Guardians of the Galaxy 2?
I'm okay with any Kurt Russell film. There's very few that I dislike.
And how they brought him back to the 70s Kurt Russell is amazing.
It is. You know, we're living in an age of miracles, Jeremy. Miracles. Absolute miracles. So he heads for the rooftop, and Frank is dead, and on the roof of Cable 54, he sees the broadcast satellite fucking chopper show up. Holly comes up behind him and draws on Roddy, and they have some back and forth, and then he ultimately draws his gun and shoots Holly dead, which we're supposed to believe there's some type of, like, attraction or love interest. She's never reciprocated anything. You understand? Like, this shouldn't be a hard decision. This is the lady you abducted, who hit you in the head with a wine bottle, who you then saw, like, oh, she needs to be saved in a hallway in the fucking alien facility that is broadcasting this, that she probably clearly knows about. He has some type of fucking moral dilemma about taking this woman out, and I don't understand it.
She killed your only friend.
Yes.
It's not like Halloween 3, where even though she's a robot now and you did have sex with her, it's like, well, she's a robot, I still might be able to have sex with her.
Yeah.
Well, she's trying to kill me, but hey.
He shoots Holly, then he takes aim at the satellite and unloads a clip as also the helicopters unload fucking gunfire into Roddy Piper, but he is able to shut down the satellite, and then it kind of explodes in a slight epic fashion, and then all of a sudden the signal's been stopped. It switches to like a bar where everybody's sitting there watching the news, and all the aliens are now visible. You can see everything that you've been asleep to this whole time. And it ends with a lady and our first pair of titties in the movie. In the last scene of this film, you get to see titties. This whole movie, tit free, except for Roddy Piper's glorious oily pecs. You get to see your first set of female titties as she's riding a guy in bed and looks down and sees it's one of the aliens and goes, what? What's the matter, baby?
It showed the newsroom before that. And someone's like, Karen, you look like shit.
And to be fair, Karen does look like shit. And
this is how many years after The Howling, with Billy Dee Williams turns into the werewolf at the end. Yeah. And then he turns into Calrissian.
And he turns into Lando Calrissian, and then makes the song "This Is America."
And then he turns into Eric LaSalle.
Drinks Colt 45. So.
The news lady's turned into a werewolf. Sean, what are your final thoughts on this wonderful piece of film by John Carpenter?
I like it, and I believe it's still relevant today. With all the consumerism out here, I see everybody buying and buying, and anytime there's a sale, like 20% off, I just think they live.
They
hurry
live.
Up and consume. Bye, bye.
Bye.
I was going to sell my car, and my friend was like, what's next? And I'm like, just stop. You don't need to buy. You don't have to always purchase.
I hate to say how materialistic it is. It's pretty much like Homer Simpson when he goes to Chocolate World, and everything in Chocolate World is made of chocolate, but he still goes to the chocolate shop and wants chocolate because it's 20% off.
Chocolate.
20%! Whereas he can eat anything that's made of chocolate.
He ate the dog.
So.
Oh, 20% off.
Now we waited to the end to break open the Pandora's box that John Carpenter obviously pretentiously said that everybody of the aliens are obviously Republicans in this movie, and this is the end of the Reagan era. And of course, the best part is like, oh, look, everybody's poor and everybody's gotten poor. And it's like, no, that's exactly what didn't happen during the Reagan era, which is like, oh, you're going to say, oh, the Carter years, whoa, they were great, you know, bring back that shit. No.
Well, there's a clear, I think the thing that's fun about this movie is that I think whether you're right-leaning or left-leaning, I think you can find an equal meaning because, it works for either ideology. If you are a conservative-minded person and you think that the government is so powerful and the people around it is bad, then yeah, They Live works for you. If you are very much like people you need to unite and wake up against the giant forces that are controlling us, holy shit, if you're a leftist, They Live works for you. So I think it's a very beautifully crafted movie in that sense. Whether or not John Carpenter's intention was for it to be a direct punch at the Reagan administration or not, I think he's such a good movie maker that he made it accessible for both viewpoints.
Well, it wasn't, the message wasn't that pretentious, and it was still sellable, but at the same time, this movie is my most pretentious movie of the 80s, second only to Phil Collins' video about living in paradise, because, gosh,
Land
it was
of
awful.
Confusion?
Yeah, it was so awful being poor in the 80s. It's like, no, it was the greatest decade ever since Coolidge. So.
Since Calvin Coolidge.
Since Calvin Coolidge.
The 80s.
Which you schooled me on, because I didn't even think that the Roaring Twenties were the Roaring Twenties.
Hey, I'm only gonna say this one time. 80s, we had Def Leppard, okay? You go to the 90s.
Dokken.
We had 80s, Dokken, Def Leppard, Rats, the beginnings of Guns N' Roses, Van Halen, some of the greatest, most fun music of all time. Michael Jackson.
Rapping Ronald Reagan.
You get to the 90s, you get stuffy.
Well.
You get to the 90s and the Clinton administration, and you get fucking Nirvana, fucking stuffy ass Alanis Morissette. Ugh.
Everybody wants to kill themselves.
Yes, everybody wants to kill themselves immediately.
And the reason is because you're married to Courtney Love.
Yes. So. And honestly, you know, my friend Rob Mayer said this before, 50% of marriages end in death. Or 50% of the marriages end in divorce. Well, the other 50% end in fucking death. You understand? Like,
Can you play that one thing. Temple of the Dog song?
Yes, at the end of the show, we will play the special Temple of the Dog song that we played.
Otherwise known as Soccer Riot.
Soccer Riot. Well, we played it at the end of other songs. I think this week is going to be... I think we're going to do a special Kill Whitey song.
Ooh,
for at the end of this episode.
That's
so
some good
bass
line.
If you stick around, you can hear the funk of Jeremy Woodworth and Kill Whitey.
That's my most anti-white song I've ever written. So.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Telling people just to kill Whitey.
Sean, do you have anything that you'd like to say in closing?
I had a great time. I'm glad I was here for this film. I didn't add much.
Thanks for letting us torture you, because we know you love Clock Tower.
We got to torture you. I felt like you're a bit of a fish out of water for this episode, but I drew power from you just being here. Your presence alone.
You extracted some stuff, and I'm glad.
You made it a more powerful show just by you being here, which makes me happy more than anything. Are you still with that? Are you still with your girl? Is she still a thing?
Yes, still a thing.
Are you guys getting hitchified? Are you going with her to Hawaii
that's
tomorrow?
That's what everybody's asking. Yes, we are going to Hawaii.
Nice.
That's all I know. Hopefully I don't die. I don't know how the air quality is, but whatever.
I feel like did you get a deal because it's volcano season?
I was planned like 6 months ago.
Hotel might be there, might be engulfed by lava. So I just want to say this is important because I've seen every Brady episode. If you go surfing, don't wear one of those tiki things around your neck, because that might kill you.
I saw this video of, which is pretty amazing. There's a video online which shows basically a river of lava flowing like it's somewhere. And it's just like this thick, it's literally a rushing river of just molten rock going out
hundreds
there.
Hundreds of thousands of gallons just flowing like a real river.
I'm going there.
I saw somebody posted a video with of that. And it had the Mario music from like the castle, like.
another important thing is with lava, if you drop your keys in it, they're gone. Don't try to get the keys back out of the lava. So even if you think for a second you can grab your keys, don't go for it.
I don't want to lose my ZZ Top keychain.
Because the preciouses must have the precious.
It's one of those things, man. You got to hold on to the things that are important in life. I think that's our show, guys. That's it. You can find all things Kimberly Ambrose because she's on maternity leave at Panic at the Deli on Instagram, and watch me doing this on Twitter. The Second Saturday Shit Show is free every second Saturday of the month at the Auto Bar. Go up there. I'm going to be headlining in November now. It was supposed to be earlier, but it got fucked up. You can find things, all things Eric Comedy at ericcomedy.com. You can check out the murder mystery dates. I'm coming to Syracuse very soon. You can give us a 5-star rating so we can read it on the show. Go on your Stitcher. Go on your iTunes. Give us a 5-star rating so we can read it. Jeremy, take us out.
It's in your nature to destroy yourselves.
My brothers and sisters, he should get down on his knees. He should beg our mercy.